Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that could crack the code if it had been taught better at school. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
Now, this episode, we start our series From the Cradle to the Grave with a few episodes talking about education, which is an issue that's close to both of our hearts. I work in the field of education, whereas Steve thinks that basically any political issue can be solved by educating people.
Pretty much.
So, in this episode, we're going to have a think about, should pupils be taught how to code? Britain was the first G7 country to introduce computer science and coding into schools. It's been followed by the US and states like New York and Chicago have introduced it as well. Is that the direction that education should be heading into, though? We're going to talk about that after this. So, Steve, how do you make toast?
What? Toast?
Yeah.
You take some bread, you put it in the toaster or under the grill, and then you press the button or turn it on, and if it's the grill, you then have to flip it over. It adds an additional step.
Obviously, Steve, you were not taught how to code at school because your answer displays a lack of computer language, which is worrying coming from an online marketing professional such as yourself.
Context matters, Corey. If you want me to break it down step by step, I can do, but...
You're beginning to sound like my computer. And computer language would be taking it almost logical step by step. So your first step wouldn't just be put bread in toaster. It would be walk four steps.
Grab piece of toast. Open bread bin.
Take
piece of bread out of bread bin. Walk four steps over to toaster.
Mm.
Put toast into toaster, press down button. In fact, I've missed out a step there of setting what setting you want it on.
I think we're now about to mansplain toast making, which is not an avenue we should be going down. In a bid to try and get Britain's children to make better toast or to code better, I can't really remember, the UK has introduced coding onto the primary school curriculum. So from the age of 7, I believe, pupils will be taught how to code and therefore have that computer language.
Hooray!
Okay, you think it's a good thing, Steve. Why is it a good thing? A
couple of reasons, really. One is that being able to code opens up an entire new avenue of potential employment opportunities for people. And so if you want to get kids from underprivileged backgrounds into jobs which are going to actually have a reasonable pay rate behind them, coding is a very good way to do that. Especially at kind of learning it at a young age is very important, because in a lot of ways, you know, we call the different coding languages. Learning to code is in many ways very similar to picking up a foreign language. It's a hell of a lot easier to learn it younger because you're able to just kind of adapt to the different syntax and the requirements to it much easier than you can if you're starting later on in life. Teaching kids to code, it just gives them a skill which is going to be very useful for them, going to be increasingly be useful for them. Now, that's not to say, you know, every job's going to need to use HTML or CSS or whatever, but bear in mind, when we say coding, we're not just don't necessarily just mean those kind of languages. We also mean the ability to use an Excel spreadsheet effectively, because that is programming. People have written up ridiculous Excel spreadsheets where they've done like games of civilization in an Excel spreadsheet, and it works. It's not pretty to look at, but it does work. So by kind of teaching people that this is the thing that they can do, you're opening up a much wider array of jobs and skill sets that they can move into as they get older.
So I'm a little bit more skeptical whether that's out of ignorance or out of maybe a different outlook to you. I'm not quite sure, which is probably something we'll explore in the episode. The economic rationale and the employment opportunities is an interesting one, but I'm not sure if it's one that any evidence we've got bears out a little bit. So the Higher Education Statistics Agency, their figures say that actually computer science graduates, they tend to have a higher unemployment rate than most other graduates. So their most recent stats were 11% of their graduates tend to be unemployed, which was the highest out of most of the other degrees. I mean, you compare that to law, it's 5% unemployed.
And what's that?
Languages, 7%.
I was going to say, what's that in compared to history and English and things like that?
I think it's the highest in terms of level of unemployment. Obviously, the idea that there are lots of opportunities for people who have a computer science language, a coding language, doesn't seem to be borne out by that statistic.
Okay, so the core thing here is, what languages are you learning? So when we're talking about the computer science degrees and things like that, that's essentially what you are learning, in effect, like pretty much anything else, how to advance, in theory, that particular knowledge set. So you are learning more about how to program certain things, how to write a specific program for this, that, and the other. If, for instance, you are able to do all of that, your project at uni, say your dissertation was all done in JavaScript, then maybe, yeah, there aren't necessarily going to be as many opportunities around that, say, as there might be around, say, Ruby or Python, which are coding languages which have a much higher salary attached to them, because I don't know if they're more difficult, but they're certainly rarer to have.
They've got better names.
They've definitely got their better names. I mean, I'm skilled in Python.
Ruby Python as well.
Ruby's a separate language, but...
Ruby Python sounds like she should be dancing a spearmint rhino.
Yeah, she does rather. In regards to that statistic, I think there's another element here that's focused on, and from my end, on only on graduate end of things. Now, in my previous role, I was responsible for managing a team of online marketing apprentices. And one of the things that we did have to teach them was how to do HTML coding and things like that. Which, you know, because it is a relatively vital thing for an online marketer to know.
Mm.
And so for me, I'm coming at this from the perspective that it's also something which you don't necessarily need to have a degree in these sorts of things to be able to make a use of these skills. So for computer science as a whole, yeah, maybe there is a bit of a thing there. I don't know enough about the area or the degree to be able to say what the cause of that is. But for me... I've seen this myself, having hired people who have come out of school with few, if any, qualifications, and gone into the and worked with me on an apprenticeship. What a kind of difference that can make! And these are people who have struggled to get the kind of the 5 A to C's at GCSE. You know, they're now quite successful. They've branched off a load of them into different areas, but it opens up more possibilities. And if you've got more kids going into the workplace with these kind of skill sets, it makes them more attractive to to people in a number of different ways, especially in and around apprenticeships. Because, you know, if you've got to train someone up, it's already a pain in the arse. Just doesn't matter what the business is, that's always the case.
I suppose that debate feels like the debate you will get between universities and firms, where firms complain that people who leave school and university don't have necessary qualifications to go straight into a job, and then universities complain that private businesses, they want their pupils ready-made and don't really want to spend time or money investing in training them.
No, I mean, to be honest, as I said, there's a good reason businesses don't want to do that, because it takes up a hell of a lot of time and effort. And it's not just the effort of teaching them, it's if you're bringing somebody new on, you have to check their work. So I've got to do all of my work and then check over their work. That takes up an awful lot of your time. So from a business perspective, it's entirely logical that they would go, is there a way we can maximise like the amount of skill sets they're having? And obviously universities, because they're not in the business of churning out people who are necessarily employable, but, you know, their overall arcing methodology and focus is on advancing knowledge. They're not too concerned about that.
Yeah, as a former teacher, I can tell you that certainly checking other people's work does take a lot of time. Also, as a former teacher, the thing that I find about coding being on the curriculum, and this isn't just coding specifically, I think this is any subject that ends up with people trying to campaign for it being on the curriculum. For instance, I've been to training with a charity called Chess in Schools and Communities, which wants chess on the curriculum. And chess is on the curriculum in quite a few European countries. People campaign for Bridge to be on the national curriculum, and languages to be taught earlier, and all these different kind of things. But I always think, as thinking of someone's working in a school, is there's very practical problems of introducing things on the curriculum, and that is often there's a lack of expertise in the teachers who are teaching them. I mean, more than half of the teachers in IT in Britain don't have computing degrees. You've got a bit of a lack of specialism there. So I think especially what happens at a primary level, where this primary school I worked at, we were very lucky. We had a specialist IT teacher who would give specialist IT lessons, and it was great, and the kids really enjoyed it. But in most schools, it will end up being generalists teaching it who don't have the expertise and can't do that properly.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think I see that more as an issue to overcome rather than an argument against. It is certainly a barrier to making it function properly. I think that's just a case, well, that's relatively easily solved by, I say easily solved, but increasing funding. So with a focus on, you know, that says, you know, you can bring in these specialists to actually teach those lessons, or heaven forfend, actually give some training to the other teachers so that they can get on board with this sort of stuff anyway. And it's not just a case of, here's the curriculum, this is what you need to teach now.
I think you'll find, Steve, there isn't a magic money tree. We've been through that. I suppose part of it will probably sounds like almost teacher union style squabbling, but I think it is a practical problem that is ignored at its peril. In terms of the actual teaching of coding and computer science, I think there's definitely a case for teaching more computer science in schools as opposed to a lot of the IT lessons that we do at the moment. I've taught IT lessons at a primary school, which were essentially year six kids doing a PowerPoint, which is, I mean, if we're honest, a little bit of a waste of time. And I think, especially nowadays, I think there's a real solid case for teaching how computers work. So thinking about how algorithms work or how search engine optimization works, I think it makes sense. So you can, if you know that there's a Twitter filter bubble or a Facebook filter bubble or Amazon recommendations based on your algorithm, if you know that these biases are out there, it at least means that it might mean that you make sure you try and leave your bubble and say, go on Conservative Home or go on the Canary to try and see what the other side are saying. And that, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, we don't say this very often on this podcast or in general in real life, but Michael Gove did a very good job on the IT curriculum that he introduced.
Can't believe.
I know. Wasn't
the line, Steve.
There are many issues with much of the other bits of the curriculum he brought in. Do not get me wrong. His history curriculum, as somebody with a history degree, is a load of
Gove.
Yeah, a load of Gove. But the IT curriculum is actually a massive, massive improvement. It does actually start discussing things like algorithms and how what they are and the kind of the impacts that they can have.
And teaching social media literacy as well. A school I've worked at before, they have a child-friendly social media space on the school, and it's almost like a social media intranet that's just for the pupils in the school. But it's a good way.
That's really good. I like that.
So it's a way of messaging people, having a profile.
Yeah. And again, this is quite interesting, and it's like, because we're talking about coding and digital skills as though they should necessarily be taught in a specific lesson. And it's like, but what you've just said there about the social media skills and things like that, to me, that's very much as much a part of, say, your citizenship and things like that. It's not the raw hard computer science, for lack of a better term, or the actual kind of skill set of coding, but it's still digital skill sets which are very relevant and that you do need to teach kids. An awful lot of those things are lacking in the curriculum as a rule, but clearly there are some schools that are actually doing some quite clever little things around that, because that is a really cool idea. I like that. Oh, that's brilliant.
There we go. Well, we should end on a note of agreement, but
yeah, we won't.
No, there's no chance of that. I mean the IT curriculum that Gove brought in, it was basically because he got influenced by the hip youngsters as well, wasn't it? I think George Osborne went to Silicon Valley and said, why is there no UK version of Google? And then Steve Hilton was out there. I think his wife still the CEO of Uber? No, she left,
yeah,
didn't she?
Yeah, she left.
And Rohan Silver as well, all these hip young Tory modernisers who I think almost want to replicate Silicon Valley here, and they were the ones that influenced Gove.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting in terms of coding, and maybe we could try and finish up, is how to maybe make coding wider. You talked about wanting those new employment opportunities, over-egged maybe, I might argue they are, how we need to widen it up beyond a few kind of sandal-wearing people in Silicon Valley on beanbags. I saw an interesting article that my wife found on a medievalist's email exchange.
Totally the sort of place you expect to find things discussing computer coding.
Absolutely. So it was it was comparing coding to brewing in the 14th century.
I think my brain just exploded or melted. Okay, go on.
Do you remember James Damone, who was the guy who wrote the Google memo, basically saying that women were not fit to code?
I wish I didn't, but yes.
And this article was written in a response to that. And the article is talking about what historian Judith Bennett has called patriarchal equilibrium. The patriarchal equilibrium is also the name of the fifth Jason Bourne film. But basically what it means is, as soon as an industry becomes profitable, women are cut out of that industry and it becomes populated by men. So, brewing in the 14th century, mainly done by women, because you couldn't preserve beer. It was brewed in a small amount at home. So when we make a pint or two, served at home, then it's gone. What happens in the 14th century is that hops is introduced from the Netherlands and the Low Countries, and suddenly you can start preserving beer. And so you can start preserving it, selling it on, making a profit. At which point, because maybe you can make a profit from it, men start dominating the industry. And by the end of the 15th century, the brewing industry in Britain is dominated by men and has been dominated thus for the next six centuries. Now, a similar thing happens in coding. So in the 50s, coding is basically glorified secretarial work. It's women who do the coding. I suppose similarly to Hidden Figures, I think it was, wasn't it, the Hollywood film about the women who were doing the calculations for the space race stuff. As soon as coding becomes sexy, Silicon Valley, blue sky thinking nonsense, all the women sort of disappear from the industry, filled by half-wits like James Damone, who then say, oh, well, women can't code. When if he actually knew his history, he'd actually know that was complete nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Ava Lovelace is a thing. It was a person who was massively important, but whatever. Yeah, James Damone is just an idiot of the highest proportion, trying to avoid swearing there.
A gove,
maybe. Yeah. He is a gove.
I suppose that's my other thing about teaching people to code. And I suppose it's similar to the way you would teach computer science and those digital literacy skills. It feels like what's going to be, if we're going to move to a knowledge economy and the Internet of Things.
Buzzword klaxon.
What we actually need is almost things that teach us how to think better, rather than necessarily a set of skills to do better. So you need to know your history, you need to know your philosophy, because, and that's, as you say, why the history curriculum that Gove brought in
is naff.
Is so restrictive, because it's a list of dates, rather than a way of exploring the past. And
yeah, rather than being about critical thinking and rational exploration of evidence, it's just King Henry VIII became the king don't know what year he became king in, because I actually did proper history.
Well, 1509, actually, until 1547.
Yeah, it says the former teacher.
Fact fans. There's a need to teach critical thinking as opposed to, say, just coding. It feels like, and again, maybe this is a bad analogy, but I'll go there anyway, that it feels like the equivalent of, in the 1850s, teaching children how to drive a steam train. I mean, that might be how the means of production, one could say, if we're going to go all Marxist on your asses, which, you know, will be a rarity on this podcast.
I know, but occasionally we do.
But it feels a bit like that, that you, maybe coding is a skill you need to, that not everyone will need to know. So some people, your apprentices, will need how to learn code, but that could be taught relatively straightforwardly. The rest of us can just use Squarespace. Please sponsor Squarespace. And we can build our website through means like that, rather than have to learn to code ourselves.
I mean, yes, and yeah, I agree 100% that there needs to be more of a kind of a focus on like those critical thinking skills and those things which really form the bedrock of any kind of learning that an individual should do, and that we absolutely do put too much emphasis on certain skills compared to those kind of core foundational skills, like the history, being able to recite off lists and dates by rote learning as an example there. You know, that offers no benefit really to anybody, unless you're trying to show up your co-presenter on a podcast, apparently.
Or win a pub quiz.
Mm. But neither of which will pay the bills. Whilst coding can. You can't just focus on those. There are, in the exact same way as you need to be literate and you need to be numerate, I would say you need to be computer literate. And I think part of computer literate really means having at least a basic understanding of coding. Not to say everybody needs to be able to have built a website as part of, by the time they finish their GCSEs, but they need to understand the very basics of it, in the exact same way we expect kids to learn the very basics of French. because if you don't introduce them to it, then an awful lot of these kids won't ever discover that they might have a knack or a talent for it. And that, for those kids, does mean they then get stuck in Starbucks or whatever, rather than being able to put themselves in a position where they can make something more of themselves.
I'll tell you someone who can code, Mark Zuckerberg. And he's helped us to produce our Facebook page, facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Some other people who can code, the good people on Twitter. And you can follow me at Twitter, at paperbackrioter.
You can follow me on at centreradical, and I just have to say, I do not approve of this segue.
Someone who might be able to code, I haven't asked him, is James Cram. And he designed our logo, and you can follow him on Twitter, at James Cram. Dave Depper, I'm pretty sure, probably doesn't code, but he does do good music, and he does our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. I'm not going to stop, because this torturous segue has lasted long enough. Happy plotting, everyone.